Curlew in Autumn, a thriller serial for radio in 6 episodes by Edward Boyd, with David Ashton as Peter Kalman. Episode 4. Peter Kalman, a small-town lawyer in Galloway, has discovered that a cottage he is buying on behalf of a mysterious client is already occupied by an elderly German gentleman and a model of a Junkers 88 bomber. He has also discovered that his girlfriend Jenny is seeing a lot of Police Sergeant Isaiah Dunsmore. But Kalman has not yet discovered who killed Nurse Nicholson, nor why an old hermit should have absconded from a very exclusive private hospital on the night Nurse Nicholson died, nor, for that matter, what the hermit was doing in that hospital in the first place.
Dead men tell no tales is, you must agree, a sexist statement. Any feminist worth her liberated salt will be quick to point out that, like Nurse Nicholson, dead women are equally taciturn. Dr. Weber stared at the trendy paintings on the wall. He was pleased with them, with himself, with the richness of his chosen world. Dr. Weber was a four-letter word. S-M-U-G. Isaiah Dunsmore obviously thought so too.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Weber.
Of course, Sergeant Dunsmore.
Are you saying that Tim Layton killed Nurse Nicholson?
I'm advancing it as a possibility.
On what basis?
Well, on the basis that Layton left this hospital on the night Nurse Nicholson died. On the basis of the known facts.
Whose facts?
Aren't the facts the same for everybody?
Yes, like private medicine.
Talking to you, Miss Oliver, is like facing a hostile political meeting.
She has a point, though.
One can only hope it's very painful.
The point being, what was a penniless old hermit like Tim Layton doing in a place like this?
Well, I'm afraid we don't hand out that kind of information about patients.
Even when they murder nurses?
I decline to answer any further questions.
Unfortunately, that's not going to stop the questions being asked.
Then, Sergeant, someone else must answer them.
There is a certain legal poetry, if you look for it hard enough. Take the phrase, mute of malice. Dr. Weber had certainly gone mute, and his malice, especially towards Jenny, was embarrassingly obvious. In older, less complicated days, both his muteness and his malice would have been cured by pressing him under heavy leaden weights. Being pressed to plead in those days was rather different from being pressed to another fairy cake or cucumber sandwich. Driving away from the Spencer Watson Memorial Hospital, Jenny was in confessional mood.
I conned you.
Me or Isaiah?
You, Peter.
I conned you too.
With friends like you, who needs Dr. Weber? The only difference between you and the receptionist back there is that she has a better hairdresser.
Oh, come on, Peter.
Old Hansford never did feature in this little scenario, did he?
No.
No. Do you think I was too dim to work that out for myself?
We thought
that the mere presence of a lawyer would put the frighteners in a lot of innocent doctors.
Not exactly.
Yes, exactly. You knew that Hansford was slightly to the right of Ronald Regan.
All right.
We needed a lawyer.
You need a keeper, both of you. Places like the Spencer Watson aren't afraid of lawyers. They employ armies of lawyers, all with briefcases stuffed with loopholes.
The element of surprise...
works fine in the movies.
Your vanity's been hurt.
No, Jenny. My intelligence has been insulted.
Once we had been friends. Briefly, lovers. Now we were becoming something else. Something that was perhaps in grave danger of becoming nothing. Something that gave me an impending sense of loss. And that afternoon I sat in my office, not thinking of anything in particular, and someone knocked timidly on my door. It was my patriarch from Nocturne Cottage.
I am interrupting?
Hmm? Oh, no, not at all. Come in, Mr...
Scholl, Gunther Scholl.
Now, let's have some light on the subject. Yeah, that's better.
There was a picture on that wall last time I was here. I admired it very much.
Oh, yes, a picture of gypsies. My uncle always maintained it was by Sir David Wilkie.
That would make it valuable, yes?
Very.
I liked it because it was about people.
So did he.
Nowadays artists are only painting the insides of their heads.
Yes, or somebody else's.
I have come to apologize.
For what?
I have been saying stupid things.
Well, as long as you've only been saying them to me.
You see, Nocturne Cottage has become so much a part of my life.
I understand.
And you will also understand that when you and the other man came to the cottage...
The other man?
The fat man.
Tell me about him.
He changed the books.
He what?
The books are different now at the cottage.
Oh, no, you're not making sense.
It must not happen again.
Don't get excited.
How can you take Magda's money? How can you promise her a temple of peace if you let it happen again?
He took his cryptic and dire forebodings away with him and left me to my own. The rich are different, not only because they have more money, but also because, having more money, they can turn their fantasies into realities. Magda von Schellenberg was rich, and she had a fantasy. She would build the Temple of Peace at Nocturne Cottage, and overnight the world would trade in its missiles for ploughshares. Much to my surprise, she had handed me £1 million and entrusted me with this laudable undertaking. But it occurred to me, was there any point in creating a temple of peace in a world inhabited by paranoics? And then it occurred to me that such a world was just the place for a temple of peace, and that anyone setting up such an institution was going to have to earn his money. I think that was when I decided to earn mine. That meant clearing a lot of old ground, which might seem an ungallant way to describe Jenny.
Why have you brought me here?
To see how the other half lives.
This is living?
Well, I would have taken you to the London Hilton, but apparently you're banned there.
So you settled for the Crockett Arms?
Right.
Big deal.
I thought it was time you and I had a talk.
About what?
You and me and Isaiah Dunsmore.
Is this going to be embarrassing?
I didn't know that one was in your vocabulary.
Buying me lunch doesn't buy you the right to insult.
Aha, you do not have a monopoly of insulting people.
Well, you're still on about that, are you?
Yes, I am.
Peter, I'm going to marry Isaiah.
He told me.
Could it be that you're jealous?
Oh, get that out of your head. I wouldn't marry you for practice.
Thank you very much.
I gather you've got big plans for him.
No, the decision to go to university is entirely his.
And his ambition to be a radical lawyer?
You're frightened of the competition?
No, no, I just happen to think there's more to being radical than shouting at doctors and receptionists.
Oh, for God's sake, Peter. What do you know about being radical? When did you ever take a stand about anything? When have you even put yourself at risk?
You're one of the elect, aren't you, Jenny? God has promised you salvation and the rest of us can go to hell. You told Dunsmore I was a lousy lawyer.
Which you are.
Did you ever pause to wonder why?
Your uncle set it up for you. Everything came to you too easily.
Possibly, but it is also possible that I loathed and despised my profession, that I saw little or no connection between law and justice.
Then, Peter, why the hell don't you do something about it?
When in doubt, my uncle used to say, go back to the beginning. But where was the beginning, and what was the beginning? Or better still, who was the beginning? Was it a dead nurse shattered on a country road? Or a cranky old hermit who lived in loneliness and laver bread? I spun a coin, and the laver bread won. And, obedient to the laws of chance, I drove down to a little pub near Dungrennan Bay, which was run by a notorious poacher named Sandy Brill.
Peter Carman,
You're looking well, Sandy.
Can't complain, Peter, can't complain. So what brings you doing this here?
Tim Layton.
Are you representing him, Peter?
I might be.
I hope you've better luck with him than you had with me.
Oh, you got off lightly, Sandy. Time was they sent you to Botany Bay for poaching.
Aye. They only stopped that because the poachers came back and beat the bejesus out of them like cricket.
Do you know Tim Layton?
Well, I don't think anybody actually knows Tim. You just accept him.
Part of the landscape.
Literally, living in a cave.
Does he strike you as being mentally stable?
Well, Tim's got all his wits about him.
Except maybe what?
Well, I was going to say diet-wise. He lives in some concoction he makes out of seaweed.
Oh, flavour bread.
Puts me in mind of frog spawn.
Why did you ask me if I was representing him, Sandy?
Oh, at any rate, I can.
Lawyers only represent people who need no lawyers.
Oh, who cares that better than me?
So what makes you think Tim Layton's in trouble?
The locals here will say anything.
What are they saying?
They're saying Tim's a spy.
A spy in a cave?
Have you ever seen his cave, Peter?
No. Is there something special about it?
It looks right across the water at the atomic power complex.
I have never been, as they say, into caves. Thousands of years ago, my ancestors rejected caves, and the way I see it, they couldn't all have been wrong. Yet this particular cave, I felt I had to see. Dungrennan Bay had been a place of my childhood, a place of magic that had probably never been and certainly would never be again, a place of swift, dangerous Solway tides, of sunburn, of homemade kites whose tails were made of long, tough, wandering roots of marram grass, torn from their subterranean dark to dance like a wind-borne star. A meandering path will bring you to the beach to the east of the cave. You know you are nearly there when you come to the remains of a stile. And that was as far as I got.
Sorry, champ.
What are you sorry for?
You, if you give us any aggravation.
Shut up, Sidney.
What is this?
The beach is closed.
Why?
I'm sorry, champ.
What's it to you, anyway?
Oh, I keep hoping that some tattered shreds of democracy still survive in this country.
You're a commie or something.
I'm a lawyer.
Who do you represent, then, eh? Bleeding seagulls?
Shut up, Cedric. I'm sorry, sir. Our instructions is that nobody don't go on the beach.
I can see four or five people on the beach from here. What makes them so privileged?
They got permission from the fat man, that's what.
And where do I find this fat man?
You don't.
It's a fairly one-sided arrangement, isn't it?
It breaks even.
You reckon?
Yeah. See, the way it works is this. If the fat man wants to find you, he will.
Some people carry a gene for mathematics. Some carry a gene for painting and music. Some people carry a gene for nothing. Maybe it all does break even, like the fat man's unilateral arrangement. Pray that it does. Or else just pray. I carried the flea in my ear back to Sandy Brill.
If I know nothing, then Tim's cave.
No, it was early closing day.
What does that mean?
The beach has apparently been closed to the public.
You're joking. Mm.
Have you any medicine for a dirty taste in the mouth?
Ah, well, I have this 25-year-old malt.
Yeah, one for you and one for me.
Yeah, why not?
Have you completely abandoned the old trade, Sandy?
Officially, aye. It's, between ourselves, no. Slide.
Thanks. Good health.
Did you have anything in mind? I mean, lurking a hint, that question.
I'd like to see into that cave.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, Peter, if you've seen the end caves, you've seen them all.
Well, there's no bully boys going to get me off that beach.
Was that what happened?
Mm-hmm.
And you want to enlist my well-known poaching skills to make them look stupid?
There's more to it than that.
Like what?
you'd be striking a blow for democracy.
You're on.
Good. What time do you suggest we meet?
There's a full moon the next. What do you say to midnight?
Midnight it is.
There's one thing I should mention, Peter.
What's that?
Nobody ever got very far in Scotland striking blows for democracy.
One good warning deserves another.
I'm listening.
I saw men on the beach.
What kind of men?
Men with Geiger counters, Sandy. Driving back to the office, the reaction set in. I was not assailed by qualms about what I was doing, but doubts began to creep in as to my motive for doing it. I remembered a cautionary tale from a long-ago schoolbook. It concerned a snooty medieval lady who was sitting above a lion pit, as medieval ladies apparently were wont to do. Anyway, there she was, row G, seat 17, when she spotted across the way a knight she had always fancied, and who was, she thought, eyeing her lasciviously. Whereupon she peeled off her glove and threw it down among the snarling lions, whereupon the knight jumped down among the lions, retrieved the glove and gave it back to the lady. Across the face. Was I trying to do the same kind of thing to Jenny? Was I simply reacting to a sexual challenge? I still hadn't decided yea or nay when I found myself not at the office, but at Nocturne Cottage.
I am pleased to see you, Herr Kerman.
To tell you the truth, I don't really know what I'm doing here.
Explain, please.
I was thinking about something else, something entirely different, when suddenly I found myself on the road here.
Perhaps the something else was not entirely different after all.
Perhaps.
You must learn to trust your subconscious.
May I ask you something, Mr. Shaw?
Please do.
That model aircraft on the mantelpiece.
It is a Junkers 88.
Has it any special significance for you?
It is there to remind me of a debt I can never repay.
The Junkers 88 was a bomber, wasn't it?
That is so.
I just can't see you looking down a bomb site.
Anyone can look down a bomb site.
Come to think of it, is there any place in a Temple of Peace for a model of a bomber aircraft?
For this one, yes. Now you know what your subconscious was trying to tell you.
Oh, maybe it could do with a little bit of assistance.
That is a model of the aircraft in which I came to this country.
A German bomber?
Yes.
When was this?
On March 14, 1941.
You're very precise.
Many people will have that date burned into their memories.
Why?
It was the second night of the Clydebank Blitz, and the night we were shot down.
Tell me,
I would like to talk about something different.
Such as?
Anything.
All right. You mentioned something about books.
Yes, that is very strange.
In one corner, there stood a high old bookcase jammed with books. Some of them were in German. A very few, were paperbacks, ancient penguins of the type that nowadays sell in second-hand bookshops for 20 times the price they fetched when in mint condition. Yet the most interesting thing about them was what their titles suggested. Das Kapital, which I thought nobody ever read. The collected works of Ulyanov, whose stage name was Lenin. Rosa Luxemburg's Junius pamphlet. Studies in a Dying Culture by Christopher Codwell, who died behind a machine gun in Spain. And more, and more, and more. And on the flyleaf, the name James Kalman. My uncle.
Well?
You learn something new every day.
And what do these books tell you?
That my late uncle appears to have been some kind of left-wing intellectual.
Was he?
My uncle's favourite reading was Ruff's Guide to the Turf.
Someone is trying to create for him a new persona.
Why would anyone want to do that?
Because that someone is after me.
The moon was riding high when I left Nocturne. It was full, as Sandy Brill had said it would be. Full and sinister, hypocritical, seeming to flood everything with light while at the same time making everything appear to be slightly off-centre. At the police station, Sergeant Isaiah Dunsmore was gazing gloomily at a geranium, which was in an advanced state of collapse.
Yeah, I think it's had it. Shame on you.
It's no me, it's Archie Douglas. He's always overwatering the plants.
It's the only way Scotsmen can show affection. Apply the love object with drink.
Yeah. What brings you here, anyway?
I've come to take you poaching.
What's Sandy Brill going to say when you turn up with a copper?
He once told me that the best night's poaching he ever had was with a couple of judges from the Court of Session.
Yeah. Well, it's a glorious night.
Aye.
Bit bright for poaching, I would have thought.
That depends on what you're after.
And what are you after?
Information.
Right on time. I like that.
I brought along a friend, Sandy.
How are you, Isaiah?
Nervous.
Good thing to be when you're poaching.
So, what's the drill?
Well, I think the tactic might be to divide and conquer.
So who's to divide and who's to conquer?
Good question. And here's the answer, short as I can make it. You kind of tinker's path.
I do.
Well, what it comes out is a matter of 50 years for this cave that Peter's got a bee in his bonnet about.
Do I go with Isaiah or do I come with you?
You'll go with Isaiah. I'm for the other direction.
What will you be doing?
Well, I'll think of something.
Will it be violent?
If the situation warrants it, then it'll be violent.
In episode 4 of Curlew in Autumn by Edward Boyd, Peter Kalman was played by David Ashton. Isaiah Dunsmore was played by Gregor Fisher, Jenny by Stella Forge, Dr. Webber by Sandy Nielsen, Shawl by Brown Darby, and Sandy Brill by Finlay Welsh. Curlew in Autumn was directed in our Edinburgh studios by Patrick Rayner.